what I'm going to try to tell you today is the really concrete things you need to do to make sure you get built and, of course, get paid. And remember, forming that relationship and getting paid is way earlier than sending out a bill. So here's the mistakes that lawyers make. Getting paid begins at the beginning. We're going to talk about how you interview clients, what should be included in your good fee agreement, setting your billing rate for success, develop good habits in keeping, reporting, and billing your time. Because remember, now, unless you just have a family trust that is paying you, we're all practicing law to make money. And, you know, we all have our own budgets and the things that we have to make our family go, to make sure that, you know, our kids get to go to school and that everybody gets to eat groceries and things like that. And I'm going to take you through a lot of those things that I have learned. Remember this. Let's learn something from our psychotherapy colleagues. Healing begins when people think they're being listened to, right? So when that client comes in, shut down your computer, unless you're using it to take notes. You know, don't take emails, don't take phone calls. Listen completely to what this person is saying. You are not seeing people at their best, usually. They're seeing because some horrible thing and really something that has kept them up for nights before they've talked to you. It's like going seeing a doctor because you have a rash that won't go away. And they're seeing you because they have a problem. They may be going through the stages of grief, and not just for a death, but even a divorce. You're going through anger, fear, denial, rage, and then acceptance. So remember that be very empathetic. Listen to them. Make sure that they understand that you're listening to them. Now, you may hear in that interview, in the first 30% what you need to know. Don't cut them off. Make them create that bond of trust. There's nothing more than creating a bond of trust with that new client that you are listening to them, because very often, I would say 70% of the time, you're going to have to push back on something they tell you, an unreasonable expectation, but you can't do that if you haven't listened to them fully. There are two great questions that you have to ask, and you can ask them as diplomatically, you can put them in whatever words you want, but two great questions you must ask. What do you think I can do for you, right? Because the best answer to that is, well, you're the lawyer, you tell me. But here's where you find out if they're from Saturn or another solar system. If they're coming in with a case that you think's worth $15,000, and of course I'm a litigator, so I look at that, and they say, well, my brother had a case like this in St. Louis and got $1 million. Then you have to say, then you need to use your brother's attorney. So make sure you ask those two questions. What do you think I can do? Ask them in any way you want to verb them. Okay, what are your goals here? Or what do you think I can do for you? But say it in a way where you get an idea of what they came in with their expectations. Because at the end of the interview, you have to have reasonable expectations where that client trusts you to accomplish their goals. You have listened. That client trusts you. You have reasonable expectations of a range of outcomes. And I may say this in a little bit later slide. People are like, you know, we're all just like children. Those of you who have children, you know, you give them choices. Would you like the celery or the carrots? Well, they actually want a cookie, but they'll take the celery over the carrot. So, you know, always give them a range of outcomes. If they come in with a consumer case and you say, look, I can probably get 85% of your money back with a couple of letters. Will that be enough? That last 15% probably is going to be a lawsuit. It could be 9 to 18 months. It's going to be more expensive. I can't guarantee we'll get attorney's fees, but the law allows me to ask for them. But give them a range of outcomes. They might say, you know, if you had told me early on that I could have gotten 85%, I would have said, great. So give them that option to maybe, I can't get all your money back, but I can get most of it back quickly. Here is what you need to discuss: the scope of the work, the flat fee, hourly, contingent, or contingent. A lot of times I'll take a consumer case saying, look, you can pay me $2,000 up front. I will credit that fully against a contingent fee, anything after that, because I might be able to get all your money back with just that $2,000. Why should you pay me a third of $50,000 if I can get it back early? They like that. Give them options. Now, I was a grievance prosecutor suing lawyers for disbarment, and we always had a little rule. If there were five letters, and this was back before email, in a client file from the lawyer there was never any grievance. The number one grievance in the United States of America is that you don't communicate with the client because you hate him. You found, you know, And that's exactly the ones you have to do. So I still have the habit of going in on Sunday, and I'll write to my client, Mr. Fuentes, hey, listen, you haven't heard from me. I know the interrogatories were due April 30th, but they asked for an extension, so they have until May 21st. Let me know if you have any questions. They love that. Just send them a two-sentence email. Oh, here's what's going on in your case. It keeps that bond of trust going between you and your client that you're communicating with him all the time. Here's another thing. You all, if you don't live in a state that already has this, I predict in 36 months or whenever the next legislative period is in your state, there's going to be a law saying you have to have a privacy policy. It doesn't have to be because now we have PHI. You know, we have all that private health information and everything else. I have a privacy policy. Send me an email if you'd like a little. It's not 5 pages long. It's a paragraph. And what a privacy policy under federal law has to say is that I train everybody in my office how to handle private information. Everyone in my office knows that they don't send out so much as a social security number without running it by me first, and your client files are kept in a secure location in a locked door, blah, blah, blah. So I created a little 4-sentence client's rights, and it's just what you have to do anyway. It says you have the right to be treated with courtesy and respect by every member of our staff. You have a right to have every communication to our office returned within one business day, either by me or a member of my staff. You know, just really nice, and they like that. Always give yourself the right to get out of it if the client asks you to do stuff that's, even if it's legal, they say, well, I want you to file 10 more calls, add a RICO cause of action and add this, and I don't play that way. Go get another attorney. I have too good a reputation with the judges, and I'm not going to play like that. You should never be afraid of getting a second opinion. I say to every client, hey, listen, I've been practicing law this long, but if there's somebody who just got out and knows new laws or can find you a better route, I want to know about it. Please take this file to an attorney, but make sure it's somebody who's like board certified and you know, you don't take it to somebody who just got a law school in September and ask them about my work, or else you can have that file if you think the guy who got out in September is going to do a better job. I have a nice short form, 2-page fee agreement if you'd like it, even for, you know, minor stuff. Make sure you discuss reasonable expectations. That includes, you know, the scope of the work, how long it ought to take, and don't be very, very, very careful. You know, clients will tell you the best version of the facts. My wife and I have agreed on everything. I see. How many have heard that before? How many times has that been true? Right. And so you say, okay, well, you have a. I'm going to have to do a quadro. I'm going to have to do a special warranty deed, deed of trust, your assumption, all that. If you've agreed to everything, $1,500. Okay, you're in your second temporary injunction hearing, and it's $10,000, and they say, you said this was going to be $1,500. And they forget why they said it. Now, I'll tell you very quickly a true, true war story about this. I had, and it's just amazing. Here is the deal about fees, and I'm going to cut it a little bit ahead, but there are going to be times your client runs out of money, but the good clients will find a way to work with you. The bad clients will lie about everything because they could pass a lie detector test. If a client says, get started on the case, file the case today because my brother from Oklahoma City is sending the $5,000 retainer, say, I can wait. Because he's had exactly that thing where somebody called and said, yeah, get started. And he said, I can wait. Guess what never arrived? The retainer. And he would have been in a lawsuit, and then he'd have to get himself out, and then he'd be, you know, and then ask yourself, we seem to park our common sense, because lots of lawyers say, I want a case so bad, and this guy says he's going to do it, and he's in flip-flops and a t-shirt. Does it really look like he's going to be able to pay you that $5,000, and you're his third attorney? You know, ask yourself, don't be stupid. Don't check your common sense at the door. This is a business. Using your trust account, I can't believe I still have to tell this, but young lawyers don't know how to use a trust account. What belongs in it? Funds that you haven't earned yet, or funds being held for an event or contract. That's the only thing that belongs in there. What doesn't belong in there? Your money. Don't pay stuff out for your bills out of the trust account. Transfer it. Have a record of transferring that $1,200, you know, whatever it is, into your account, your operating account, and then pay your bills out of there. I can't believe lawyers still say, well, I've earned that money, so I'll just pay a check out of the trust account. No, that's bad. Non-refundable retainers don't belong in there either. I just recently switched office, and I honestly spent at least 40 hours over 4 weekends going through at least, you know, God, boxes and boxes of old files. I said, well, now it's time. I called the file shredder service, but before they got there, and nowadays, the file shredders used to come and say, put it in, we'll leave. No, luckily, they leave you those bins for a week, so you can do it, and you can really fit a lot. I got 1,500 files into two bins. As long as you take out all the, you know, don't give them all the binding and everything, rip out just the pages that you need to shred. But now I put in my, that you are giving me, unless I'm required by law to keep it longer, you are giving me permission to safely shred any paper files that I have of yours within 4 years after the matter is completed. And I think that's going to help me to do that. Now remember, there also is an ethics opinion that says before you shred or destroy a file, you have a duty at your own expense to go through the file and make sure there's no cash, stock certificates, other papers of value. So you do have that duty and it's on you and you can't charge the client for looking over your file. How do you set your hourly rate? Here's the big concept. You can't charge more than what's reasonable and necessary. Right? You can't say, you know what? I have a lot of bills this month. I'm going to charge you $900 an hour. They're not going to pay a solo practitioner $900 an hour. You can't pay more than what the client's likely to pay with your level of skill and reputation, right? If they go around and everyone in your community, in the smaller communities, is charging $175, you can't charge $350 an hour. You're not going to get hired. But you can't charge less than what you need to support yourself and often your family, given all your resources. Now, when I say that, you might be in a two-wage earner family. So, hey, look, we need, you know, $8,000. As long as you're bringing in, a clear $4,000 and I'm bringing, we're going to make it. But you have to make that call. What is your monthly budget for everything? So this is a little speech I give. How do I figure out what my personal budget is? And when I started in 1989, I did this, and this is what: how much do I need to make in a year? That's your macrocosm. Macrocosm is what I need to make in a year, and the microcosm is how much do I need to make each day. So I look at the end of the day, is somebody going to pay me for this much? Okay, I'm on track. And that is, the microcosm for a solo practitioner is not 8 hours a day. If you need 8 hours a day, you will fail. Go get a second job at Handy Dan or whatever. The successful financial model for a private or solo is that you have correctly priced your service. You should be able to have a successful practice billing and collecting 4 hours a day. Because you know how the big firms say, I billed $2,500, 2,500 hours last year. Great, who cares? Nobody paid them. So, but if I look at the end of the day, I used to do this in 1989 because I was panicked. I had a wife and two kids and I thought, oh, I'm going to go bankrupt. I said, and I look at the end of the day, yep, I think I'm going to get paid for 4 hours today. I have good clients. I have this money in the bank. I always could go home and heave a sigh of relief. And so that's 20 days per month. So if your personal budget requires you to bill 6 hours a day, I'm sorry. Statistically, you're not going to make it. Like, overwhelmingly, you need to be able to budget and collect 4 hours a day. So what do you do? How do I calculate the four-hour day? Add up all your bills, your mortgage, your groceries, your car payment, and always include estimated income tax. I never want to be in a fray with the IRS because they're crazy. if my personal budget for everything, my mortgage, my groceries is $8,000, but it's going to cost me $4,500, I need to, my big microcosm is that I need $12,500 per month. So you divide that by the 80 hours you need to bill, and that comes out to $156 an hour. Okay. You think, and if your community, let's say, is $175 or $200, you say $156 an hour. I'm not going to bill exactly $156, but that's reasonable in my community. I have a reasonable budget. I have reasonable overhead. You know that you have a successful financial. As long as your resulting hourly rate is within the accepted range in your community, you're golden. You know, 156 hours is great. Now, the other thing that I don't think I have a slide on here, well, how do you find out? There's a lot of kids. Now, you're in D.C., and everybody knows what everybody bills, I'm sure. But in smaller towns, I say, go ask the judges. The judges are great sources. How much, Judge Johnson, how much do you award on civil cases involving consumers? So, well, you know, depending on your hour's experience, between $200 and $250 an hour. Okay. Now, remember, you need to get your bills out the door, and you need to get the easiest path for getting money in the door. My bills, as you'll see, I'm absolutely dedicated that my bills go out on the first day of the month. And so at 9 a.m. I send out about 40 bills a month, just like every practitioner. Some are small. I did a will. I did a deed for this person. Some are larger. And about half, especially Austin, is very, tuned to technology. So people said, don't mail me a bill anymore. Email me my bill. So now I email the bill, and it has a hyperlink. It said, Dear Joe, here's your bill from services in June. Let me know if you have any questions on it. By the way, if you want to go ahead and pay me now with a credit card, hit the hyperlink that says Pay Claude Now. And they hit that hyperlink and the beautiful payment page comes up. Honestly, I did that at 9 a.m. By 10 o'clock that morning, 60 minutes later, had $3,000 in credit card payments. People just immediately, you know, paid with their credit cards. So a good billing system, good habits and discipline, having a way that can pay you when the bills arrive and incentivize them to use that system. Don't forget the next day what you did. This is the problem is, remember, you know, we used to use a pencil and you write on a pad. I'm old. We used to do that. And then we'd say, at the end of the month, I'll collect it. No, do it every day. Do it every day. Now, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I still use time slips. But every single day, I will dictate or write down or email my secretary, say, put this in the system. If you forgot what you do, look at your outgoing email. It's a huge source of clues. Oh, yeah, I did send the bill to, you know, Mr. Cameron. Oh, yeah, I did do that. Oh, yeah, I forgot it because I'm busy all day long having thousands. But look at your outgoing email. It's a huge area that will show you what you worked on. And then don't use shorthand. Use I spoke to Bob rather than spoke to client. You know, we were learned where I spoke to client, you know, about that. And also remember about the upcoming hearing and the never reveal confidence. Since I speak a lot on attorney's fees and ethics, right now the law is switching that you can't redact what's in your bills anymore. One Supreme Court of Texas said, we can't tell what you did. You redacted it. So put down there, I will make long things that I don't have to redact, but it won't say, got a settlement offer for $32,000, going to respond with $37,000. You know, you don't put that, but you do, you know, discussion of settlement offers, you know, blah, blah, blah. But so in Texas, your bills are subject to full review. I think that's the way the nation's going to be going. So everything is going to be reviewable. Be nice. Throw in entries at no charge. Don't make your stapler a profit center. You know, if you're charging people for, you know, fax paper, you know, and things like that, you're just an idiot. Sorry. Don't charge it for binding, coffees, you know, supplies. Throw in things like in some states you can't even add a surcharge. But if you want people to pay you the credit card, say, but we do a surcharge of $35, all right, I'll be waiting on that check then because you're saying that people just think you're stupid for doing that. Don't. Charging excessively for legal research or file review, 0.3, you know, file update, 0.2. No, tell them what you did. Take another 2 seconds and write out exactly what you did. And if you charge too much for copies and faxes, I've probably done 2,000 mediations. Never advertised as a mediator or an arbitrator. I just, people like me, whatever. The only reason the case didn't settle is the guy had 50,000 pages of copies at $1 a page. I think there's another thing that I didn't cover because we don't have enough time. In your attorney fee agreement, you need to have a file destruction clause nowadays. Get the client billed right when they're the happiest, when you finish that day. Give them the option of emailing them their bills. That's what I'd say. You know, they prefer debit or credit cards. Use a payment link on your email. Don't sue clients unless it's an existential risk to your law firm. Go make new money. The truth is, good clients will work something out with you. Bad clients will lie, and it's a mandatory counterclaim for malpractice. I cannot tell you how important it is. You're going to get sued, and you're going to go make money with new business. Here's what clients want, right? The six concepts are competence, communication, accessibility, accountability, and collaboration. I think there's one more here. Hang on, that's five. And respect and courtesy. Okay, now go around the room. What do you think came in number one about what clients wanted? Anybody, yell it out. Communication. What? Respect and courtesy. Collaboration. Let's see what clients want. Let's see if it works. Oh, you see the little drum roll there? The survey said, and this takes you back to that very first interview, collaboration, that you understand their goals. You understand the goals, and you're going to try to lawfully achieve those goals. You are on the team. That's the number one thing clients want from you. Number two, yell it out, communication. All right, let's see. Accessibility. When they call you or the secretary or somebody calls them back, right, that you don't say, oh, well, he's
He's much too busy to call you.
I call him back on a Saturday or a Sunday if I'm in trial or anything, or that night or anything, just to let them know. Or I'll send him, hey, I'm in trial, but we're finishing tomorrow. A Thursday morning, we'll be back in the office. But, you know, just to send them, I know you're out there, and I'll get to you quick, right? Third, that you're a good communicator. You explain what's going on so you don't have those unhappy conversations about what happened. What happened on my case? You said we were winning.
Well, actually, a month ago, I found...
You didn't tell me about that. You know, we could have changed tactics if you so communicate with him. Number four, accountability. You don't blame it on the secretary. All right, accountability, respect and courtesy, and what comes in dead last. Yeah. No, and that's, and I figure that's because they already figured by talking to people that you're competent. But what they really want is for you to be on the team, that you're accessible, you're a good communicator, you accountability, respect and courtesy and competence. I have never advertised, and I have, all of my business comes from other happy lawyers and other happy, and my clients who refer their clients to me. And it's because I try to form these relationships and I try really to stick with them. And I've got friends for life from clients I've had. But if you're going to get work from other lawyers, meet the expectation. If you say you're getting the decree there on Wednesday, take care of your dog, because you know your dog's going to have to be taken to the vet that day. You know, have the work done. Would you ever, you know, you? I know when I see another attorney on the side, I'll tell Cheryl, we're going to be doing all the work in that case because that person's going to have one crisis after another. They're completely undependable. I don't understand how that lawyer ever gets paid, because they're terrible. So I always do everything on the deadline. I'm a little type A, in case you can tell. But I always, on the deadline, I tell other lawyers I'm doing it, and then they love working with me because, yeah, he's fun to work with. He says he's going to do it on Wednesday, it's going to be there on a Wednesday. If he says on Friday, it's going to be there on a Friday. You know, I'm the first one that says, okay, we got all the documents. Well, when do you want to go to court? Here's the dates that I'm available. I take that thing. So I start the conversation with the other lawyer. I always keep them apprised. I say, here's what I'm going to need in a divorce case. I want to get I want to get your 401k statement. I want this. I let's do this informally if we can. And so it's easy to, I make it easy to do business with me. Make sure you interview in a way which results in reasonable expectations. Have a written agreement. Communicate very often, right? That's so important to avoiding grievances. Just communicate with the client. And it's always the ones that you don't want a client to communicate with because they're so jerky that you really should do the most, right? Have excellent billing habits, really. If you don't, let me also tell you the psychological part of this. If you don't bill the client promptly, they think, oh, she's so rich, she doesn't need the money. Yeah, she can't do I didn't get a bill for 90 days. She's got to be, she doesn't need my money. Right? But if you say, my expectation is that I'm going to charge you a very fair fee, I will always give you the opportunity to have my fees reviewed, you can get a second opinion, but I bill on the first of the month and I intend to get paid. And that's the reasonable expectation. I'm going to trust you and you're going to trust me because I've listened to your story and we have a whole range of outcomes that we've talked about. But if you don't bill, you are not going to get any credit for integrity that you need that money. Anything you've heard me say, if you want to discuss, if you want forms, just claude@lawpay.com. Thank you all for your attention. Please feel free to contact me. I hope you enjoyed it.